This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I am not coming in tomorrow. My week is done, unless there's a problem. I'll explain that in a minute. I work for a nonprofit corporation. As such, they give their people Good Friday off. And so they are not going to be in, and I do not plan to be in, unless a change that we made today has a problem. Then I will be in. But aside from that, I won't be. And we've made this kind of change before, and we haven't had a problem. And so I'm not really expecting to be in tomorrow, but you never know how things go. It is episode 158 today. And it has been a good week. Got a lot accomplished this week, and actually got my taxes done this week, so I haven't done as much writing as I would have liked to this week, but getting taxes done is important, so I did, I did discover that there is what I would consider to be a bug in TurboTax, which means I'm going to have to go through my taxes again, step at a time. Apparently, in TurboTax, if you're using Excel to figure a bunch of things up, like for multiple businesses that you might have, and you have columns in Excel that are set up as currency, so they have a dollar sign in front of them and commas, and you copy and paste those into TurboTax cells, when you move off that cell, it wipes it out and doesn't enter the number. Thought I had everything done last night, and then when I woke up this morning, Jesus had pinged me about, oh, you better check that figure. So I went to check it, and in fact, that figure was okay. But a previous figure, when I went started going through, I looked and I thought, wait, I put something in there that's supposed to have income in it, and didn't have income in it. Went and pasted the income in it from the spreadsheet again, didn't take, and I went, oh no! So then I entered the number, and it was fine, but refigured everything. Sadness. Sadness! So what that means is I have to sit back down with TurboTax tonight, start at the beginning, go through every single screen again. Yay! So, there we go. But at least it's just checking and it's not hunting for all the different stuff, and I can just go. And who knows, I might find something else that I didn't put in that I could put in and get a little more money back from the government. So, anyway, so because of that, there is going to be an edit in the podcast today, because I need a movie. Because I always play a movie in the background while I'm working on taxes. And I need a movie. I thought I was done, so I didn't rent one for tonight, but I'm going to have to stop up and get one. Anyways, in other news, my daughter is coming up on her first performance in public with Skinny Improv. That's coming up next Thursday. Unfortunately, it's down in Branson, so it's for a wedding, so I'm probably not going to be able to go see her, which I would just love to. I'm trying to think if there's some way I can get this done. Branson's a long way to drive, but I don't know. I'll see. That's next Thursday. And what's interesting is there's a couple of people that aren't going to be able to be there. And so Jeff Jenkins, who is the founder of Skinny Improv, is going to step in. And so Lizzie might actually end up doing a scene with Jeff Jenkins. So, hey, we'll see. It's an interesting thing, that improv stuff, because Lizzie was saying when she went, she was trying to hold back a little bit and, you know, not just jump in like, okay, I'm here, you know, because she said, I've only had one class. But she said, pretty much, when you're on the team, you're on the team. And everybody's like, well, great, let's do this thing. And it's like that. It's improv. It's like that. It's very group-oriented. So it's cool. It's cool. Someday, get back to it. Anyways, in other news, let's see. I told you about, I have the grand dogs. I have our kids' dogs because they're trying to sell their house. That's all fine. And I think that's it. Oh, writing. Writing's going well. I did get to The Darkness. Got started with The Darkness, which is the pivotal chapter in the entire series, is what I'm working on now of Grumpy Old Prophets. That's going well. And it's sort of an interesting synergy here because this is Easter weekend and I'm going to be working on the Darkness chapter in Mass this weekend, if everything goes well. So, what better weekend to work on it? And I think I know what the map is and I think all the pieces are in place. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out. Because you never know for sure until the words are on the page. But I think it's going to be fine. So, because I have some place to go. I have something to say. And I think I can say it in such a way that evokes emotion, which is a big deal. I like that. Anyways, today, I was working on taxes late last night, so I didn't actually put together any notes for today, and I was just going to ramble about things that were going on in my life, and then I got up this morning, and I was in my reading room, because that's where I do my reading. I was in my reading room, and I was just reading the articles that were up, and I came across an article, very cool article, called Just One More Game. And it was from New York Magazine. And it was about what the author of the article called stupid games. And I started reading it. And the more I read the article, the more intrigued I got with it. And I thought, I'm doing a podcast on this. So anyways, I am at the Redbox location. So I'm going to turn this off for now. I'm going to go get a movie, and then I'll be right back. I will be back so fast. It's like I will shut this off, and then I'll be back. It's just so amazing. If we could just do this in our lives and get things done this quick, it would be really cool. And I'm back. See, that is so fast. I just love that. If we could figure out a way to... That would be so cool. Anyways, so I do have to do a little navigating to get out of the parking lot here because there's a huge Budweiser King of Beer truck they're unloading. Anyway, so this week I was thinking that I would just chit-chat on the way home because I didn't have any notes. But I came across this article and I started reading this article. It was 7 pages long. And the more I read this article, the more I thought, okay, this is a topic right here. I have had some experience with this topic. And the title was Just One More Game, Angry Words, Facebook, and Highly Addictive and Other Hyper-Addictive Stupid Games. The author... was a self-described video game addict. And he started talking about the history of some of the video games. And, you know, it was pretty interesting. It brought up a lot of interesting memories because he talked about what he considered to be the beginning of the stupid game movement. And that was Tetris in 1989. Nintendo put out the Game Boy in 1989, and suddenly people were no longer chained to their game consoles. Now they could walk around and play games. And when, I guess, he says when Game Boy first came out, it only had one cartridge for it, and that was Tetris. And for those of you who haven't played Tetris, basically you have these blocks, and they're different shapes, and they fall down from the sky, and you can twist them around, flip them around, and flip them back and forth, and then you can fit them in. Or wait, you can just rotate them, and then you build a wall. But the object is you want to fit them all together into this wall, so that when you get a full wall across, then that disappears, and then the blocks just keep coming, and they just keep coming, and just keep coming, and just keep coming, and you just sit there and play this thing for hour after hour after hour. And this is pretty much the definition of what this guy would call a stupid game. And then he backed up and he started talking about the fact that popular games reflect their times. He said there's actually such a thing as game scholars who study this thing. And he started with one of the first big games, Monopoly. If you look at Monopoly in terms of that, that was in the 1930s. It was in the Depression, and it gave people the ability to, for a few hours or so, imagine that they were moguls that were buying up all these properties and stuff. And it was in the Depression, obviously, and so it reflected its time. You look at a game like Risk that became very popular in the 1950s, which Risk is all about world domination. I mean, it's not subtle at all. World domination. Well, what was happening in the 50s? There was this big struggle of the major forces of communism and democracy and who would win out. And then we moved into the 60s, and one of the big popular games in the 60s was Twister. I remember Twister. Oh man, I love Twister. Gave you a chance to get all tangled up. Man, one commentator called Twister, he said this article, he quotes one commentator called Twister sex in a box, which, you know, for young men, well, for this young man especially, you know, playing with young girls, wow, Twister was good. Anyways, I couldn't believe they let us play Twister, but anyway, so it's Twister, and then he brings it back around and talk about Tetris, and it was interesting because Tetris was birthed in a time when, you know, the Soviet threat was still there. There was this faceless force that was seemed to be like it was invincible, and it was just keep coming and coming, and it was going to conquer. And that's really Tetris. It just, no matter how many blocks you get rid of, they just keep coming. And you can try to stay ahead of it, but eventually, of course, it's going to overwhelm you. And as the guy says in the article, this was bureaucracy in pure form. Tetris. And that the final insult is that it annihilates free will. That you just sit there and play it over and over and again and again. And you don't even know why you're doing it. You're just playing Tetris. Well, I happen to know why people are doing it, but we'll get to that in a minute. Obviously, I have an opinion on everything. So that sort of started something. Of these highly addictive, repetitive games. And there's been a whole bunch of them since then. Now, there has been some major advances. Because for about 25 years, video games were pretty much tied together with gaming consoles. And so, if you were going to play video games, you were stationary. You were in your home. And the video games that were being put out were always becoming increasingly more complex. They had huge budgets, huge staffs. There's still a big market for those. You know, Gears of War, Call of Duty, Halo, Modern Warfare. I mean, they're amazing games. And the game engines that drive them really are amazing that they can do as much as they can in real time. to produce these graphics. It's really, really incredible. However, in 2007, I think it was, there was this little device that came along called the iPhone. And suddenly, you had enough power to do really decent gaming on a little thing you carried in your pocket. And in addition to that, the iPhone, of course, introduced a whole new interface with this multi-touch, pinch, zoom touchscreen. And so that gave rise to a lot of other things. Like Angry Birds. Angry Birds. According to the article, it has been downloaded in its various forms 700 million times. 700 million times. And then, of course, there's been other advances in the whole stupid game. Things like Farmville. You know, Zynga is this huge, huge entity. Well, the writer of the article said that his wife, who had never really been a gamer before, all of a sudden she had an iPhone, and she started playing games, and he would start experiencing something he had never played before, that he would be mid-conversation with her, and her phone would go, bling, 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 you know, whatever, and she'd have to stop her conversation to look over and see what Words with Friends had just chirped about, because did she have a friend that got a triple word? And he said he actually started joking with her about the fact that he was going to invent the iPaddle that was used for when that happened. He would put it over the phone and it would be inscribed on the back with messages about the analog world, things like I love you or be here now, which is something that we will talk about some more in a few minutes. And these games, these highly addictive games, have racked up some impressive numbers. The author of the article quoted a Rovio, I think is the name of the company that makes Angry Birds, quoted a statistic that Angry Birds players were spending 200 million minutes inside the game every day. Every day, 200 million minutes of time is evaporating from people's lives playing these games. Now, as the author of the article points out, there have always been nonsense, stupid games in our existence. Games that really didn't amount to much when you actually got to the end of it. But the big difference has always been that those games required an opponent. Those were games that you played in real time with another human being. I got a little concerned there for a moment, because I'm driving on a two-lane road and there was a guy coming towards me and his car was bobbing around. He was like texting or looking for something, and I was just thinking, please don't come across the center line while I'm in the middle of this podcast. This would be my most exciting podcast if that happened. Anyways, what was always different about stupid games in the past was that you played them with a human in real time. At the very least, you were in close proximity to a human, you were having a shared experience, and you were enjoying it together. That's a difference. Because what we have now is not that. What we have now are games, and one guy actually described these games that were pinching and zooming and doing all this kind of stuff, described these games as knitting games, because you're swiping the screen and you're doing all this. And it's a singular experience. And the author of the article was doing some comparison as well to the trending and what's happening in these games. He was saying, like, Super Mario Brothers. Okay, it takes about a minute and a half to get through the first level. In Angry Birds, 10 seconds to get through the first level. Why? Because they want to reward you quickly and give you, lights, little flashing lights, sound effects, that you've actually accomplished something with your life by beating a level in Angry Birds. And they want to engage you very, very quickly so you'll stay with it, because everything is designed to keep you in the game. They just want to keep you in the game. Now, there are actually some people that look at all this and say, oh, well, that's good. That's really good. Yeah, stupid games are a good thing. In fact, they may be the answer to all of humanity's problems. If we could just figure out how to make stupid games of weight loss, we could lose weight. If we could just figure out how to make, stupid games on education, we could educate everybody. Okay, yeah, that's not going to work. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So, of course, corporations try to use this as well to gamify all their kind of stuff and get them to, get more people to play games. I mean, McDonald's is famous for their whole Monopoly game that they play, trying to get you to come back and play games some more. It's interesting. Zynga just bought a company that made a little game named Draw Something, and I'd talked about it with friends for several days, joking along. I'm getting my mail, one moment. Joking along like, yeah, we need to invent one of those games because this Draw Something game, this little company was on, they were running out of money. I have to adjust my mailbox if I can. One moment. Looks like somebody pushed too hard. My mailbox has little doors on either side, and if you push too hard, the doors on both sides flip down. So let me get that pushed back up. And we'll get back inside. I'm right up against the mailbox, so I can't get my door open. Just a second. I'll get there. One moment. Now my shoe is stuck. Hold on. Hey, there we go. Okay, we're good. Draw Something is one of the new little highly addictive games. It's kind of like Pictionary. It has like 14 million daily players. I didn't realize that. But when Zynga came in, they bought this company on the strength of Draw Something for like 180 some odd million dollars. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, the amounts of money. Why is this important? Because these games make a lot of money. There was another interesting observation that some people grouse about the fact that games like Farmville, Cityville, all those kind of games where you're just trying to build something, they shouldn't even be called games. What they said they should be called, they are click-powered machines. They are click machines powered by the human need to achieve progress by a predictable path and a willingness to pay small amounts of money to make that progress go faster. They are not games. Then the guy went on to say, well, maybe you could say they're gamified games. But anyways, so the upshot of it all is, it was a very interesting article, and he was talking to a game designer. Hi, sweetie.
Hi. Bye.
I love you.
Bye.
Have fun. She has her Monday-Thursday service. That's something that the United Methodists do. It's not Good Friday service. It's Monday-Thursday. M-A-U-N-D-Y. I don't know what it is. Anyways, I'm sure someone knows that. He did have an interesting quote. This one game designer was talking to him, and he was talking about the fact that the deepest relationship that he ever had with a game was poker. And he was almost dangerously addicted to poker. And he said, quote, somehow teetering on the edge was part of the fun for me. It was like a tightrope walk between this transcendently beautiful and cerebral thing that gave you all kinds of opportunities to improve yourself through study and self-discipline, making your mind stronger like a muscle. And at the same time, it was pure self-destruction. There's no word for that in English for a thing that does both of those at the same time, but it's wonderful. And then later he said, wait, I think it's game. I think the word for that is game. Okay, well, I'm not sure I agree with him that the word for something that is both self-destruction and makes your brain smarter is just game, because I think there are some really wonderful games out there that you can play. But I certainly do agree that there is a class of these games that is not necessarily healthy as implemented by some people. I don't think there's any given game that just across the board you can say, okay, that's bad, you should never play that game. I mean, because, you know, Farmville, okay, fine. You know, Draw Something's cute. Angry Birds is cute. But each of us, as human beings, we only have so much time in the world, in our lives. You can't make more, you can't make less. You get to decide what you're going to do with it. And in your life, you have the capability to spend your time in such a way that you have the potential of improving someone else's life, that you have the potential to deepening your relationship with someone else, that you have the potential to embark on an epic and a quest and an adventure that is only something you can do, that no one can stop you from doing, and that if you do not do, there will be a gap in the world. All those potentials exist. There's certainly nothing wrong with relaxing a little bit and playing a game. There's nothing wrong with that. That was a reminder for me to do something. I'll figure out what that was in a minute. But what happens is that people start playing these games and they play them more and more and more and more. And they get to the place where these games suck all the time out of their day. Why is that? Why will we never be able to use these type of game mechanics for anything useful? Because the flesh will not drive people to use them for something useful. It will break down. Why is the flesh so interested in pushing people to be addicted and to play these games for hour after hour after hour? It is precisely because these games waste time. You're not going to be able to put them to useful benefit, because as soon as you do, people will lose interest in doing that. It's like the old days when they tried to put out a lean burger that, frankly, when they did their taste test, tasted just as good as the regular hamburger, but as soon as they put the word lean on it, nobody would buy it, because the flesh says, "Woo, we're not doing that." It, you know, flesh moves them away from it. Okay, so what's, aside from just the fact that these games take time away from what you could be doing to better pursuits, what is the core problem? The core problem with these games is they have an illusion of being connected and being social, but in fact they aren't. Because I knew exactly what this guy was talking about. I mean, I have friends that you're sitting there trying to have a conversation with them and you will just lose them. They will just go someplace else. Because their experience is a singular experience of life. And these games just pull people into a singular experience of life. And they pull them away from relationship. I know of a person who had an acquaintance that they used to play one of these social games with. And the acquaintance said, you know, this thing is really kind of taking over my life, so I'm not playing it anymore. Okay. But what this acquaintance taught my friend was that, you know, even though this game, it was like Cityville. And one of the ways in Cityville that you get more points is if you go and have a conversation or play a game with someone else, then you get coins. Or you go down to this central work area and you work there and you see other people and you might engage in conversations and you can get more coins. Well, what this acquaintance would do is they took out like 5 or 6 different accounts on Facebook. So they could just set up a bunch of computers and play as a bunch of different people. And then they could, they could just play against themselves so they wouldn't have to go to all that pesky stuff of playing with somebody else. And this is what happens. You know, like on Farmville. Well, they try to get you engaged working with other people, but what the players end up doing is they just go out and take out a bunch of Facebook accounts so they don't have to rely on anybody else. So they can just have their own little fiefdom and they can just play and play and play, play and play, play, play. And it's all isolation. And one of the cardinal rules of determining whether something is flesh and spirit is if it's isolation, it's flesh. It's just that easy. If it takes you away from relationship. And so, you know, it doesn't seem to me to be really hard to figure out. Now, again, it's not a problem with the game itself. It's a problem of what the flesh does and takes the game and pushes it. And if you're not careful, these type of games can just pull you right out of any relationships that you may have. And one of the reasons that it's so attractive, one of the reasons that it's so easy for the flesh to push us this direction and to pull us out of relationship into these games is precisely related to that quote that I said that I would bring you back to when they talk about games like Facebook and they say that they shouldn't be called games at all, that they are click machines powered by the human need to achieve progress by a predictable path and a willingness to pay small amounts of money to make that progress go faster. See, the fact of the matter is that life is complicated and unpredictable, and it takes effort. And what is so comforting about these games is that they are repetitive, they are learnable, and they are meant to allow you to have the feeling of achieving some sort of skill, of accomplishing some sort of goal that really, in the end, has very little currency in the real world and, in fact, leads you away from things that would have currency in the real world. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about skills. Because if you're completely isolated and all you're doing is talking about Facebook all day and all you're doing is talking about Farmville and, you know, Angry Birds and those kind of things, you may have some people to talk to, but a lot of other people are going to look at you like, what? These games certainly are not going to teach you social skills, and they're certainly not going to teach you, the vast majority of people who play them, any kind of skill to help you make money. All they're going to do is give you this false sense of, well, I've really accomplished something. Look at my big spread that I built. Okay, well, that's fine. Except you have other things you can do with your life. There's something creative that you can do. There's a new friend you can make. There's some new skill you can learn. And if you're spending hour after hour after hour on those stupid games, you aren't going to do those things. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.